Get ready for a week-long celebration of music, community, and fabulous fun with Joy Radiothon 2024. Joy has the largest collection of rainbow podcast content in the world, and you can help keep us out loud and proud by donating during Joy Radiothon 2024. Just go to joy.org.au/radiothon. Mark it in your calendars because Joy Radiothon returns June 1st to 7th. And remember, we all flourish with joy.
You're listening to a Joycast from GLBTIQ Community Radio Station, Joy 94.9.
And we're going to be talking about perception today with a couple of travelling... I don't know what we're going to call you today. I think you might have to self-nominate. But Joe, first, how was your week?
My week was up and down and around about, as this time of year is, with a full moon. And it's lovely to see so many people flocking into the city today to experience all of the open buildings in Melbourne.
Yeah, and Miff, people do love to flock to the flicks.
They do, indeed. And it would be better to flock to the flicks than to perhaps to be flocking to Slate to get your new Twitter handle, like Carlos Danger.
What's that all about?
Oh, Anthony Weiner. Sexting.
Carlos Danger. Are you serious?
That is his Twitter handle, yes. So I think we should come up with the escape pod. We should have an app where people can type in their name and we'll give them a Twitter handle.
Like Carlos Danger.
Yes, particularly as I think the lady that he was with was called Sydney Leather, which makes me very much think of Brisbane polyester.
Perth rayon. Okay, we have a couple of guests today on the escape pod who go around the world tricking people.
They do. They're the cerebral magicians.
Yes, they're not Romanian ATM bandits.
No,
that we hear so much about.
They were caught this week with $300 million conservatively estimated.
I know, right. So fraud. You're not Romanian ATM bandits, God, are you?
We were caught with $300 million. That'd be fantastic.
That would have been a sleight of hand.
So our guests today are Simon Coronel and Dave Lieb.
Welcome to the Escape Pod.
Pleasure to be here.
Woo! Thank you.
Thank you for having us.
You're welcome. So you travel around a lot with your performances, and we were just speaking before about cultural differences or while you're performing, and it's a would you call it a sleight of hand?
Yeah, I mean, I prefer illusions personally, because that's telling it like it is.
Yeah,
you know, and a trick like is special effects or optical illusions. That's, you know, that's exactly what they are.
Yeah, and a trick, no more, no less. Hooker does for coke, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Well, that's on the downtime.
Right,
it's between shows.
So you were mentioning before because you're a Mandarin speaker.
Yeah, not fluent, but functional. Enough to survive. I've been to China a few times. I can, you know, make conversation and get by. It was my second language at high school and then university, so it came in unexpectedly useful.
Yeah, and so tell us about when you with a multicultural, especially a Mandarin-speaking crowd. How does that work?
Well, the way this happened was back. The first time I went to China was with the Melbourne University language exchange thing, which was really interesting to go there. It was, you know, my first time in a, you know, totally different language speaking environment. So it was, you know, fascinating. And I was really new to magic, illusion, sleight of hand back then. And at one point when we were haggling in a market, just trying to get something cheaper, one of my friends said, oh, show him a card trick. And I thought, okay, I'll see it. And I thought, mate, let's see if I can do this in Mandarin, because my Mandarin wasn't very good back then, and neither was my sleight of hand. But I started doing this card trick in really broken Mandarin, and just this crowd started gathering and loving it. And then I realized that my friends who couldn't speak Mandarin could still follow exactly what was going on, because a card trick is such a culturally universal thing in any culture that has playing cards. And from then on, this idea that it really works across language barriers planted. And since then, I do basically the same routine in Australia or in non-Mandarin-speaking countries, and enjoying the fact that everyone can still follow it. And it's this fascinating kind of linguistic cultural experience for everybody to see.
So how does that work? I mean, the infection of laughter crosses cultural and linguistic barriers?
Well, to be honest, in that case, it's more the fact that, again, in most Western and indeed Eastern countries, now people know what a card trick is.
Right.
The idea of picking a card, putting it back in the deck gets shuffled, then the person tries to find the right card. People understand that now. That's become a fairly culturally universal thing. It probably wouldn't work in kind of rural Africa, I'm imagining, but, you know, in the Western world, most of Asia, that's a familiar concept.
Right.
So even if they don't follow the exact words, they can still get from the actions and the movements and the context kind of what's happening next.
So between being masters of misdirection and making the impossible happen, and Dave has an amazing routine with a time machine, you are the master of misdirection. Could your services perhaps be required by the Edward Snowden and Julian Assanges of the world?
Maybe.
We'll check up with them and see what they say.
I just heard that Julian Assange is running for senator, the Australian Senate.
What's, correct.
I'd vote for him.
You heard it on the Escape Pod, Joy. Join under 4.9.
Probably not the current topic, but...
I don't know how that all works. And
it's a whole different area.
It's a different kettle of fish altogether. Yeah. And he hasn't disappeared. He's ingratiated himself on a lot of TV screens. He's a very high-profile guy. So tell us about the time machine.
Oh, it's basically the concept was I'm a huge nerd, so...
I can confirm this.
It came about because I worked out that magic illusions look a lot like time travel. So, you know, a magician can make a coin disappear from one side and appear in another. But in my mind, that's not a magic trick. That's teleporting an item from one side to the other. So I realized I could map the two effects identically. So rather than come up and be a magician doing magic tricks, I'm a time traveler doing, you know, manipulating space and time. So it's sort of a different angle that I went with.
So do you have a lot of props for this? Is this something you can travel with?
Yeah, so it sort of grew out of control when I started doing this show. Excuse me.
Dave's just had his tonsils out a few days ago.
Yeah,
so
I'm really
they
dedicated.
Disappeared.
Yeah, really dedicated. Basically it started off with a time machine that we built, and it's basically made out of cardboard. Can we swear on this? Or not? I better not. Because I had to...
No.
Okay, I won't swear.
Prefer not.
Keep it PG.
So
our community is very conservative.
Oh, very good. Because the analogy I wanted to give, when my friend came along and said, wow, your time machine looks great. It looks crappy, not S word. And I went, okay. Because no, that's a compliment. Because if it looks crappy, it means that you've put an effort to make it look crap. Rather, if it looks, you know, the other word, then it means it actually looks like rubbish. I went this whole path of this bumbling, you know, Doc Brown type guy who built a time machine that looks like it's made out of cardboard and aluminium foil, which it is.
But still works amazingly.
And it works. So that's the only. So I've gone for this whole comedic path down.
Right. Yeah. But that would be a bit hard to take overseas, wouldn't it?
It's extremely fragile, so we haven't quite worked out how we would travel, move that box yet. So
we need to make a reinforced fiberglass version, I think, sometime down the track. Yeah,
yeah. You know? Or a hotel bed fort.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Or carried on board. I'm sure that won't alarm
the plane. This big silver foil, tinfoil cardboard covered box saying time machine on the plane.
Yeah, you see how that goes.
Yeah. It'll be fine. It'll be fine.
The US federal inspectors will have a ball.
I'm thinking it looks a little bit like a high school project.
Yes, that's the
feel. Or a primary school project.
Primary school was definitely the feel I was going for. Yeah, so I'm glad you got that.
But the cool thing about it, though, the way I think it's easy to explain is if we had a $10 million production budget, the machine wouldn't look any different. You know, it's meant to look exactly like a cobbled-together, comedic, terrible time machine that then surprisingly works in the actual show.
So how often do you guys get to perform together?
Not enough.
Yeah.
It's a new thing.
What we realised before we were doing the shows for the Magic Festival, a couple of weeks beforehand, we both needed to do rehearsal shows. So Simon had the great idea of going, hey, let's just host some rehearsal shows. And what we'll do is we'll do our bits that need rehearsing one at a time. So like he'll do a segment, then I'll do a segment, and then he'll do a segment. And the idea is we'll do segments from our show, but completely out of context. So someone could come watch our rehearsal show and then, you know, and not understand sort of what we're doing, and then come see our show and really see it all come together. And that was great because it basically gave us that inherent ability to banter between us.
Or alternatively mess with your audience's minds.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
A little from column A, a little from column B.
And, we have a lot of fun because, you know, when he's on stage and, you know, if the trick doesn't go particularly well, it's very easy for me to make fun of him.
But never vice versa. Because Dave's tricks always work perfectly.
100% success rate.
100%.
Yeah.
I was actually going to ask, have there been some memorable slip-ups?
Oh, God, so many.
Well, see, for me, I do what I call cheat mode because my style is comedic and bumbling. And I guarantee you, if I mess up, most audiences are going, We're not sure if that was part of it or not.
Ah, that's clever. That's how I run my career.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, so we can relate, you know. So we just, I just go along with it, and people can't tell. One of the shows that I did the other a few weeks ago, I actually forgot a whole routine, and it was only near the end when I had to bring a prop back on stage, and I realized, oh wait, this prop wasn't introduced because I actually forgot to introduce it as part of the routine. Ah, I'll just go along with it. It'll be fine. And then no one had any idea. So it was, yeah. So big mistakes happen quite often, for me anyway. Whereas Simon, I think, is a bit sleek.
They happen to me too, but they're more noticeable. I pretend to be all sleek and suave and, you know, something like that. Yeah. So when something goes wrong, it's mainly just... There's a great teller of Penn & Teller in the US,
yes,
who, absolutely brilliant performer and thinker, had this great line in one of his books when talking about a trick that went really badly wrong. And he said, look, it failed as magic, but succeeded as comedy. So, hey. And as long as you know, as long as you're ready to play it that way, when inevitably something, things are always going to go wrong. It's, you know, like your career, you know, it's everything.
Yeah.
But as long as you know when it happens, you just play it as comedy, roll with it, move on to the next thing. It's
fine, exactly.
You know? And I guess precision is everything because, you know, last week on the Escape Pod, we had Ursula Martinez and Jess Stone, who are...
Wow, you had Ursula.
We did. So, as you would know, one of Ursula's most award-winning and famous performances is what she can do with a little red hanky. And
she can do so much with a little red hanky.
Correct. So that is misdirection that requires precision timing. I have no idea how
precision
she would...
many things.
So
as
another artist, what do you think of a show like that where she puts it together with one red hanky and an outfit?
It's fascinating because I always have this thing about... there's no need to put performance art or any kind of art into little boxed categories. You know, it doesn't have to be magic or comedy or music. It's like, I just want to see some really cool stuff on a stage that I'm willing to pay $50 to see. That's my criteria for good performance art. And if she's doing something like that, fusing a whole bunch of different genres, bring it on. It's great.
She's so have you thought of talented. Moving into burlesque then, Simon? Do you think
well,
I might
no. Funny you should
that.
Say that, actually.
I didn't ask that question.
Are you wearing a glittery G-string now?
Not now, but...
what the audience can't see is the eye makeup that Simon is wearing.
Okay, so I've been a collaborator with Simon for many years, and the things I've had to do by being a collaborator with him. I don't want to talk about it anymore. But I guess we have to in this scenario.
All right, show us on the dolly where he...
Well, yeah, pretty much.
Well, long story short, he dragged me along in LA to go buy him a flesh-coloured G-string because of a burlesque act he had to do.
Well, I have a burlesque routine.
Oh, you do?
A burlesque routine.
Yeah, I do. I actually do.
We might need to just take a short break and come back and hear all about
I'm
the burlesque.
I'm
with our special guests in the Escape Pod this afternoon, Dave Lee and Simon Coronel. Simon, back to the LA story.
Some in Hollywood.
Yeah. As many incriminating stories begin.
So I'm in Hollywood. I'm performing at the Magic Castle, which is this members-only magic and illusion cabaret club. It's an amazing place.
Joe Bluth,
You know what? Arrested Development, the Gothic Castle was based on this place.
Right.
So this is much cooler than the, you know, the parody in Arrested Development. But yeah, it actually even looks similar. Mitch Hurwitz, who behind Arrested Development, is actually a member. And you know, goes
wow, there, and so that's why he's so intrigued.
That's why he really knows how to write magic.
Make this
parodies.
Yacht disappear.
Exactly. All there. And one of the things about that's amazing about Hollywood and LA in general is all the performing arts. You know, it's performing arts mecca of the world. There's so much creativity and energy here. And, you know, the magic world and the comedy world and the burlesque world and the music world, they're all hanging out together and so on. So I'm at the Magic Castle and I meet a bunch of burlesque performers. Now, at the time, my experience of burlesque had been really limited. I thought it was kind of vaguely classy striptease. That's all I really knew about burlesque.
That's what it is, isn't it?
And well, no, it can be so much more
intrigued.
Than that. It can be so much more. A lot of the time, yeah, it's like, yeah, you know, whatever. Not really my thing. It's fine. You know, no big deal. But one of the people said we do this burlesque night, and they described a couple of the acts. Sounded really interesting and creative. So I went along and saw what I now know is called neo-burlesque. And this is funny and edgy and incisive and clever and just amazing to watch, and involves, you know, nudity and titillation as well.
So you're not sure why he was invited along.
Yeah, no one really knows. But I realized that burlesque could be this kind of funny, fascinating, really out there art form, and I got hooked. And then one night I was watching these shows that are, you know, most predominantly female, you know, as burlesque tends to be, but then saw a couple of male burlesque performers, and then had this idea of, hang on, what would a magic trick look like done in burlesque style? And I had this idea for a routine, and the specifics of which I won't go into, but I thought that'd be hilarious if someone did that, primarily a comedy piece. And I realized basically doing a card trick while progressively, similar to Ursula's thing in a totally different way, so a spoken piece with a bumbling person trying to get a card trick to work and progressively ending up, you know, less clothed in the process. And very much like Joe Bluth in Arrested Development, right, with the shirt off my back, that was the starting point. And I realized no one else was going to ever do this unless I put it together. So, long story short, a year later, I pitched the idea to the person who runs the burlesque night. They said, oh, yeah, I'd have that on stage. I did the act. Poor Dave had to film it because I wanted a video record.
Oh, Dave,
he didn't need to see that.
You're recoiling in horror.
This was...
Well, the worst part, too, because normally you're not allowed to record in those scenarios. So we had to get permission. But not everyone knew that I had permission to record. So you would see all these lovely women coming up doing burlesque act, and then this guy comes up, and I bring up my camera, I film it, and I put my camera away. So they're probably looking, it's like, why did he wait that long just to record that guy when he could have been recording everyone else? But then I actually had someone come up, and it's like, excuse me, did you have permission to record that act? I was like, yeah.
Did they give you one of those hats with press?
Yeah, I
wish. You should have done that. That would have made more sense.
I just like, creepy guy. Like, hello, creepy guy. Yeah.
You know, and it's like, it's cool, but, you know, so seeing... Seeing, you know, your sort of close friend you've known for years in a G-string can be a confronting experience for, you know... Oh.
Well, after all the other things I've done, actually, it wasn't that bad.
Yeah, actually, compared to some of the other stuff.
So has this routine made it into the regular set?
It hasn't, because most of my normal stuff is this kind of philosophical, erudite, corporate market, you know, sort of stuff. So this is totally off the side. This is just a personal, you know, artistic expression project that I don't have on my website, I don't have publicised. But I did actually do it a few weeks ago in the Perth International Burlesque Festival.
Oh, okay.
I knew one of the organisers through a friend, and I thought it'd be fun to do it in Australia for the first time.
So, and what was the audience reaction?
They were great. It went really well, because it's an act that, if you think of it in the context of an all burlesque show, so you've got these, you know, sort of exotic, you know, voluptuous, seductive, you know, usually female performers being all titillating and burlesque-y. And then the character,
this guy.
Then some some dude in a, you know, with a card trick comes on. You're going, what are we? And
this
what's
is
great?
Incongruous.
Yeah, this is who, what, and what I love about it is several people said this. It totally loses the audience and then totally wins them back.
Right.
Because at first it's this, why are we watching this? And then they realize it slowly turns into, you know, this kind of semi-stripping thing. And then they realise, oh, okay, this is a setup. This is great.
Right.
So it's really fun to do.
I have fun. So you've only done that once in Australia?
Only once, yeah, so far.
But I mean, you've been further afield than Perth. You've not only in China, you've been on your website. I saw there's a clip from you in Berlin.
Hamburg. Hamburg. That was recently a 4-month contract at a variety theatre in Hamburg.
Oh, really?
It was mind-blowing.
Was it near the Reeperbahn?
Close. Very which is a fascinating area.
is that how that's pronounced? That was Reeperbahn.
It's Reeperbahn.
Reeperbahn.
I can't do the pronunciation.
It sounds a lot more frightening the other way.
Absolutely.
No one wants to go to the Reeperbahn. Yeah. That's not a good place.
Yeah. Isn't it ironic?
Yeah.
So do you guys have favourite places that you like to travel to? After just explaining how there are some audiences that really get it, are there, you know, places you just love getting an invitation to perform in?
Well, I have favourite places I want to visit, and because I was in Japan a while back, and I wasn't performing there, but one of our close international close-up magicians, probably one of the best in the world, he just happened to be there. He lives in LA as well, but I was holidaying in Japan, and he was there, and he actually took me to his master's sort of school. And Japan has a very different style of performing. They're very precise, you know, very hardworking, very dedicated. And just going in there...
All unlike us.
Exactly.
And if a trick doesn't work, are you expected like, to take the sword? And
yeah, exactly. Seppuku
that's
time.
It is exactly that. It. And, you know, I'm sitting with a room full of this unbelievable, you know, technically advanced magicians, and I'm there going, hey, time machine! Yeah.
Made of myself!
Yeah, exactly! So that was fascinating. So it's good to see how different performers behave differently, and Japanese audiences in particular are fantastic, because they're always just almost over the top in how they react. You know, like, eh?
Nane?
What? And there's like,
like every magician knows these knows the words for what yeah. in Japanese, because that's always what you hear.
Yeah. So if I had to perform to any audience, Japanese audience is the ones I would perform to. Yeah.
So do you pick a country that you want to go to and see if you can sell your skills there so you can get a free flight? Is that
that, that would be how I would do it? Yes. Right.
Yeah. Working on it. Yeah. It's, when it lines up, it's brilliant.
Yeah. Know, yeah. It's like Bhutan. Things. Here I come.
Yeah.
I keep subtly hinting that Simon should get a 4-month gig in Japan and require.
I'm working on it. I have a lead through someone that I'm actually pursuing that. There's a semi-regular 3-month performing contract I know about in Japan where they book magicians for it.
So how do you get these things? Because you've worked on cruise ships.
I haven't actually done cruise ships.
Oh, I thought you'd... No. Maybe clairvoyant. It's in your future.
Everyone except me. I'm the only guy. Cruise ships are one of those things that I know a lot of people who do, and they're one of those gigs that sounds brilliant and then gets really tiring really quickly.
Oh, my God. I would rather stick a fork in my eye.
Stuck on a ship.
Yeah.
Can't go anywhere.
With a bunch of bad-hipped retirees.
Yep. Very likely. It's not like, you know, those, like, you know, under 30 singles naked cruises. You know, that's not... That's very few cruises.
Yeah. Yeah,
and we'd like to let our audience know that, of course, next week we'll be having the representative from Cunard Lines come on and talk about the joys of cruise travelling around the world.
I'll be really into it then.
Yeah. Oh, it's great to go on the cruise, but performing
being a cruiser,
Like every week.
I love going up.
That's a whole different
thing. Where is that stateroom?
Where indeed?
we're all cruised out after that.
Yeah, cruising has a different definition to our community. Hamburg, LA,
Beijing, in China, London, Edinburgh, the Edinburgh Fringe Festival.
Must be a wonderful time. So how do you get all these gear? Do you look online? Do you approach an agent?
Most of these ones have been, because there's two kinds of work I do. One is performing at corporate or private functions. So someone's having an event and they want it to be really great, people to like it, so they hire entertainment for the event, you know, or a speaking thing at a conference or whatever. So enhancing someone else's event, that's really work type one. Then number two is actually producing shows for the public who buy tickets to go see the show. Okay. And these are very different, you know, kind of beasts. Most of the travel has been the latter. It's been me knowing about something, say the Edinburgh Fringe Festival, and going, I'd love to do a show there. You apply, you pitch them a show. You know, either you do it for an unjuried one where you pay your own costs, or you, you know, pitch and they accept you into their managed version where they cover the venue for you. And then you go and you do a 2 or 3 or 1 or 4 week run of the show, and the public buys tickets. You get a cut of the profits depending on what the deal is with the festival. And that's, for me, that's my favourite way to travel, because then you're in one place for a while. You've got time to really explore and flesh it out. Whereas the once-off conference corporate things are great, but it's usually just a few days and then you've got to get out of there.
Right. Well, while the listeners of the Escape Pod have got their pad and pen out and are doing the sums as to how they can quit their day job and go to their favourite location and work.
And it's all about the mind, isn't it, today? We've got a couple of travelling minstrels. You're probably not a minstrel.
Minstrel works.
I'm not sure what a minstrel
is. Cool. I can't play a lute. Don't you need a lute to be a minstrel?
I think everyone needs to be drinking mead.
Yeah, I'm down with that.
Yeah. And playing World of Warcraft or something. I don't know. It's a new world to me.
Dominion. For all of those Dominion card players out there.
Next show we have free mead for the audience.
If we've got any listeners who are either World of Warcraft fans, loot players or mead drinkers, let us know. Let us know how you go every weekend with your LARPing.
Particularly if you do all three.
Yeah. I love a live action role play.
What if you've always wanted to ask a magician a question?
Actually, that's pretty more on topic. Yeah. Here's your chance.
Nothing's off limits.
Nothing's off limits. 0427 join 949, or you can ring in and ask our beautiful receptionist, Heath, 1300 join 949, or email onair@joy.org.au. And while you're doing that, if you're not a member, why don't you become a member? Joe, you're a member?
I'm a member.
We have to be members, otherwise we can't grace the airwaves with our dulcet tones. If you want to become a member and you're not, a family can join up to Joy 94.9 for $96. You can be a full individual member for $72. Concession is only $36. If you're under 18, you're a bit of a bub, that's $22 for you. If you're a corporate titan, you can become a member and all of the 10,000 people in your organisation for just $165. I don't know why you're not doing it already.
Well, and of course, your pet can become a member too.
That is correct.
Yes.
We do have a few woofers and a... and a few... Oh, no, I can't say that.
No. I'm wondering, we could have some rabbits. And, of course, what are magicians without rabbits? Gentlemen, what's your take on the rabbit, the rabbit in the hat?
Magicians without rabbits are these guys.
Yeah, we don't do rabbits.
You don't do rabbits?
Yeah.
No cruelty to animals?
No.
A really good point. It's funny because I completely agree. Like, I'm really anti-animals in showbiz generally. Possible exception of dogs, who I think actually seem to enjoy it from what I've seen.
Oh, yeah.
But, like, but it,
dogs are show-offs.
Before you even get to the ethical, moral stuff, they're just a pain to deal with. Mm. Massively high maintenance. You've got to feed them, clean up after them. Traveling with them's a nightmare. I know heaps of friends who use animals in their acts. I just don't want to live my life that way. That's just way too much to deal with.
How do they actually navigate quarantine and things with the rabbit in the hat?
It's complicated.
Mm. Is the rabbit trained? Is it like a card-carrying professional?
We have a friend who has a rabbit, and the rabbit just sits in the hat all day and does nothing. But to be honest, he gets so much attention. Yeah. It's like, wow, okay, if I could be bothered, it's such an easy way just to get a good rep, because he'll bring out a hat, put a rabbit in there, put it in the front of the stage, and all the girls will come and go, oh my God, rabbit, woo! And they think he did a great show, but he didn't actually do anything, he just put a rabbit on a hat.
Yeah, that's the other thing, the whole pulling a rabbit out of a hat, obviously we've seen a lot of magic, you would imagine, never seen someone actually show a hat empty, magic, rabbit comes out of the hat.
How do they do that? Do they just squeeze the rabbit into the hat?
There's a lot of different methods you could do it by. Basically, get it in there when you're not looking, one way or another. But it was actually, the rabbit in the hat was a big thing back in, I think it was like the...
It was something
like, it was about 1920, and then it just died out quickly, and it's actually never come back. Rabbits appear out of boxes or trays or things like that, but almost never a hat now.
But it's a real icon of illusions.
Yeah, it's become the most iconic image of magic, is the rabbit in
the
hat.
And that expression, I had to pull a rabbit out of the hat or a hair out of my... I'm going to ask you another question.
Sure. Break it down.
Let's get real. When you travel, what do you take with you? Do you have to take as little as possible?
Yeah. Which is still a heap of stuff.
We had Jess and Ursula. Here last week, and they were talking about how innovative they had to become. And we also had Ruben Kay, because you tend to be travelling as affordably as possible, and you quite often have to take everything yourself. Yeah. So what are the logistics for you guys? Is it just a pack of cards?
To trade notes with them.
So for me, like, I'm a prop guy, so I'm not organised. I jam everything into a suitcase. I'll pay excess baggage, whatever. But this guy has, I don't know, mastered the art of minimalist baggaging, and he would not stop talking about how he managed to, you know, shrink a 10-centimetre box to 8 centimetres and go, I've saved 2 centimetres. He's probably spent, like, months researching how he can rearrange the ordering of his items to save that 2 centimetres. I'm like...
That 2 centimetres counts, man. Yeah. That's a serious 2 centimetres.
But, Dave, earlier in the show, you said that you were the nerd or the geek.
Yeah, he's the uber geek, the uber nerd. Yeah, well, I'm just a normal geek.
Different kinds of geek. Yeah. He's the time travel geek. I'm the travel systems optimization geek.
So, being a master of... misdirection, surely when you go to check-in, you can just create...
We're not that good.
Well, well, actually, there's... Oh, God, I don't know if we should talk about that on public radio, actually.
Yeah, do it.
You switch to someone's boarding pass?
Here's the thing. So often when I'm travelling to do a show, let's break it down. Let's get real. I'm used to being stopped at security because I often have bizarre-looking objects in there. For example, one trick I've been doing recently involves a nutcracker.
It's a neck massager.
Yeah. Well, isn't it always? But, like, I need a nutcracker, for example. Now it looks like some kind of implement of destruction. All kinds of, you know, lots of wires and things for microphones that look suspicious. I'm usually stopped at security. And there are a bunch of ways to get things through security that they, you know, they might not normally let go through because it's a valuable prop that I don't want to stash in cargo. I just want to hold on to it. And just depending on how you arrange your luggage, what goes under what, there's actually a bunch of techniques to get a few things through that might be a bit questionable. Nothing, you know, nothing illegal or anything, but just things that I know are going to cause a hold up and cause an annoyance for me. Hmm. There are ways to kind of get around that a bit.
Such as?
Yeah. I'm not going to go into details.
Here I was thinking you just got yourself a free upgrade by just, you know, taking someone else's first class boarding pass.
That's happened. Well, we wouldn't do that. Nothing illegal or immoral.
Power for good, not for evil.
Ethical masters of misdirection.
Yeah. Misdirection. Exactly.
Yeah. No, I would totally steal an upgrade if I could, but I just can't. I'm not, no.
Well, that's like that thing about everyone going, once you can do all this, you know, playing card manipulation, oh, you could just win money at cards, that'd be great. Have you seen Rounders or The Sting? Or it always goes badly.
Yeah.
You know, in that respect, the movies are dead on.
No, it goes badly. I just feel like they didn't do it well enough. I think if we can really nail it, you know, and okay, I should condone this.
Simon, one of your routines that I think you are world famous for is how you take generally a $5 or a €5 bill and fold it, and it becomes right in front of your eyes a $50
Indeed.
Note. And so surely you could recreate that.
You could. The thing about that, though, and this is where the telling it like it is comes in against me, is that everything you see, the reason I call it illusions is it's very much like doing movie special effects but live. So it's more challenging in many ways to do it there and in front of you. But, you know, you can't change a 5 into a 50, but you can make a very compelling illusion of it changing into a 50. So sadly, it doesn't affect my income very positively.
I'll give you a spoiler.
Oh, damn.
The 5 and 50 trick costs him $55. Wink.
There you go. It's wink, wink. Wink.
Nudge.
Subtle.
So what are you saying?
Subtle point of that. It's too subtle, man. It's too subtle.
Okay. It's I'm just trying to keep it down low. Yeah.
We've got too a message subtle. In from Bob from Burnley. Wants to know if there's any magic you can do on air.
Funny that he should ask that. Prepared something just for this situation. You up
did
for trying
you?
This?
Did it'll, you also call yourself Bob from Burnley?
It'll take us about 4 minutes to do this. Do we want to kind
yourself
of...
out.
Okay, so everyone listening... or we can set it up now and do it in the next segment.
We'll
whatever.
Do that.
Okay, yeah. So set it up. Basically, everyone listening, go to my website, simoncoronel.com, S-I-M-O-N-C-O-R-O-N-E-L.com. On your desktop or your laptop or your phone, it should work on iPhones and Android devices. And there'll be a link there saying, Joy FM listeners, click here for your interactive illusion. So we won't do it now, but just go to the website, take your time, click on the link, and you'll get a big grid of symbols. And then once we come back to this illusion, we'll explain what this is for and how this is going to hopefully work. Oh, God, I hope this works. It's really experiment.
And you're still with us here. You're in Escape Pod, Joy 94.9. We have some amazing guests on who travel the world. They're Australian. They're both from Melbourne, right?
Get back to it. We're doing a magic trick. Come on, focus.
And they're about to illuge us.
Cool. Well, do you guys want to try this as well? You
yeah,
can
sure.
Follow along, see how this actually goes.
What do I need? Props?
No, just go to my website. Go
do
to
I need a time machine?
always. Don't we all? It makes everything so much easier. Go to the homepage and click on the Joy FM listeners click here link. You'll get
oh, look at me clicking away.
Yeah, big please. Grid of symbols.
Oh, hello.
So everyone who's looking at the symbol grid, for those of you just ignore the next 2 minutes of this, everyone who's looking at the symbol grid, click on the grid a few times, and you'll notice that every time you click, it shuffles itself around. Okay, so this is so that every hundreds of thousands of people who are listening, right? I'm assuming. Hundreds of thousands of you listening. If you all click a bunch of times, you'll be looking at a different grid of symbols, right?
Right.
It shuffles it. Once you're happy, stop clicking, and once you've got an arrangement you like. Okay, once you're there, look at any symbol. And now let go of the mouse, let go of the keyboard, make sure there's no way your computer could know what you're thinking from now on, right? Because this is going to be freaky.
Because we know that computers know what we're thinking,
exactly, right?
Exactly, right? I have tinfoil hat on, so I'm right.
Exactly. So basically, we're going to try and read your mind from the station. So look at the grid of symbols. Look at any one symbol at random. Okay, now.
I'm looking.
Looking at
can
one.
Can you hear, listeners?
Now let's randomize it even more. Move to a different one. Forget the first one. Jump to a different one. Now just look at it, don't click on it. You're no more clicking now. So now move to a different random symbol. We're just going to bounce you around the board to randomize it.
Oh, is that what we're doing?
Now from whatever symbol you're on, move to the nearest blue symbol from where you are, just as the crow flies, straight line. If you're already on a blue symbol, stay on it or jump to a different one, whatever. We're making it random. Now from your current blue symbol, move to the nearest red symbol. Look at that for a minute. Now move to the nearest green symbol, straight line. Don't worry about hopping squares. Whatever green symbol you're looking at right now, all of you will be on a different one, depending on your different grid and everything. Look at that symbol. And now, Joe, anytime you're ready, I'm going to ask you to say now, and we're going to try and read everyone's mind. Focus on your current green symbol.
Now.
Right now. Is this the symbol you're thinking of?
Yes.
Oh, my God. If it worked, call in. If it didn't, don't call in.
So call
if
in.
If you're driving and you've just had an accident, call your insurer.
You should not have been playing magic games while you were driving.
It did work.
It's worse than
that's
16.
Cool.
It did.
It should have worked for about 90% of the people listening.
Well, it worked for us in here in the studio.
Mm.
Yeah.
I'm astounded.
This is where the software engineering background comes in useful.
Yeah?
To work on stuff like that, yeah.
I was going to say, is it the software engineering or is it also the background that you have in psychology?
It's all of it, actually.
This or Mandarin.
Yeah, well, not Mandarin this time, although we could probably translate it into Chinese.
So how do things work when you're overseas? Do you find that the audience responds differently to things, or is it pretty standard?
It's mostly universal. You know, there's this line that when something disappears, you don't need to translate that. That's immediately obviously impossible to anybody. But there are lots of... The differences are little. They're subtle. There's, you know, certain things that people understand that they don't in other cultures. There's different things you need to change the phrasing of.
Right.
You know... Just stuff like that. Also, like,
so what have
local.
You had to change for which community? Just
well, there was one tiny thing. This gig I was doing in Germany. I've got this illusion where, so taking a bottle of drinking water, taking off the cap, and then the cap actually penetrates inside the bottle. So you know it's impossible. The cap could go inside its own bottle, but it looks amazing. Now, but the thing is, due to a bunch of details we won't go into about how it works, the exact size and shape of the bottle is really important.
Right.
Now, in Melbourne, I know exactly which bottle is the best. It's the Fantal brand 350ml water bottles are the best for it. But when I was in Hamburg for 4 months and I was going to be doing this trick every night, I had to find a new bottle. I had to find a German bottle of water. You know, I couldn't take over 150 Australian water bottles that look weird. They're like, what's this weird foreign bottle? So I had to go to the supermarket and buy, I got about 23 different bottles of water of different brands and different sizes, and had to just go and experiment on them all until I found a German one I could work with, because it's got to look like a normal, you know, unobtrusive water bottle. It's got to be recognisable to the people in that city.
So in addition to finding the appropriate props, what's the training regime like to be able to seamlessly and professionally deliver misdirection?
It's basically the montage from Rocky, but with playing cards. That's the best way to imagine it.
So
with
running upstairs in Philadelphia. Yeah.
Skipping rope, a cut and restored magic rope instead of a skipping rope, cards instead of eggs. It varies for every person who does this. When I'm working on something new, I'm training really hard, doing, you know, conscious hours of practice and so on. But once you've got an illusion working, it's more just practicing a bit before the show just to keep everything limbered up and working and so on.
Right.
So, but when it's R&D mode, like building one of Dave's time travel illusions, the whole house gets converted to this kind of workshop area where you're testing angles and constructions and filming it and watching it back and trying different lighting. And, you know, it's more full-on than any full-time job can be.
Right, right,
when
right.
You're actually in production mode.
So this is your full-time job?
It is now, yeah.
Yeah.
For 2.5 years now since I quit my other day job.
Yeah, awesome. What a great way to be able to travel the world, do what you love, and be able to pay your way.
It's pretty good.
Yeah, that's
fantastic. It has its drawbacks, but it's pretty good.
Yeah, so you're traveling again soon, right?
Yeah, going to Vegas in the US to attend a magic convention.
Yeah.
Which will be fascinating. Because you want to go to these things, like any industry, you know,
of course,
conferences and conventions, to keep up to date with what's going on and get inspired and meet people and connect and so on.
And is there a lot of competition in the, or is it more of a community that supports each other?
It's mostly a community. There is kind of competitive bitchiness.
The odd wanker,
and
yeah.
Yeah, you know, it's always that. You get factions and cliques and stuff.
Really?
But mostly
what is it, like the
supportive.
Card guys against the,
yeah, that can,
the three
that,
ring
that
people?
That can totally happen.
Really?
You wouldn't believe.
The pro-rabbit faction.
Yeah. It's this saying that the human condition is like a fractal. You know, you zoom into any one part of it, and then there's more subparts, and there's more subparts, and you zoom deeper. And magic's no exception to that.
It's a magic Mandelbrot set.
Oh, yeah.
Curling away
oh,
into
completely.
Infinity.
More than you can imagine. There's even, like, within the card guys, so card magic people, there's the hardcore card guys. And then there's sort
what's
of...
What's that? Like the girly cards?
No. Good going. There's probably that as well. Right. But the people who are into, like, the really different... There's this whole thing. One tiny example. In magic, there's a big subculture of people who only do techniques that are difficult to do. Which I think is really stupid, because what matters is the effect on the audience. You know, what's the dramatic impact of the whole thing?
But there are mountain climbers who are very similar to that.
Yeah,
it's only the degree of difficulty.
Only climb hard stuff.
Yes,
you know.
Quickly, without oxygen.
Yeah, like make it as hard for yourself as possible. Which in mountain climbing, fair. I mean, yeah, actually, if the goal of it is your own personal satisfaction, great. But if you're doing this for an audience, you know, their experience, I really think, has to be the primary, you know, objective there. And a lot of the people who do the difficult moves don't end up being as entertaining as the people who do whatever move is the best, regardless of difficulty or easiness.
Oh. So
that's a personal artistic philosophy thing coming in there. But,
yeah, so yeah. I imagine it's not a massive community of people who work full-time professionally in performing, so you meet people when you're travelling around the world
you
see a lot of the same faces?
Yeah, you do. It's bigger and smaller than you'd think. You know, it's smaller than most other professional things. You know, there's fewer performers than, you know, sort of accountants or, you know, lawyers
dentists.
Or anything else. Yeah, exactly. But there's a lot of them out there. You know, if you think about it, particularly in Europe, live entertainment, live cabaret entertainment is still such a huge part of the culture.
Mm-hmm.
So every theatre, every show, there's got to be people filling those shows and there's got to be people doing those acts.
Right.
So how long has it taken you, Simon, to become sustainable in your career?
It's a tough call. It was this Germany gig, actually, that put me over the line. So it was a couple of years since leaving my day job. That, you know, I was living off savings. Luckily, I was at a big corporation for 5 years. I knew that I might eventually want to leave, so I consciously stacked up some savings. I don't own a car. You know, I don't own a house. I deliberately didn't do that because I wanted to build up my savings for the leap. You know, that was a tough call that I had to make. And so for the first 2 years, I was very much living off the savings from, you know, corporate right. stuff before I could get turn the curve upwards on the income.
Yeah. And what about you, Dave? Well, look who just appeared. How do you work full-time in your magic career?
Yeah, I actually don't work full-time, so I've on purposely kept magic as a side hobby, if there's interest for me. So
okay.
I work full-time during the day and basically collaborate with Simon where I can. That's why I'm always hinting at him getting the good gigs so I can come along and be part of the entourage without having to do any work. I've always sort of kept it as a fun part. So
how do you arrange the travel side of it? Do you have to take holidays, annual leave,
yeah.
that kind of thing, negotiate with your employer?
That's right, yeah. I usually take annual leave. So I'm working as a contractor now, so I have a bit of flexibility.
Okay, great.
So do a bit of both.
Yeah.
Had with us today in the studio two terrific guests, Dave Lee and Simon Coronel. So, gentlemen, thank you so much for sharing the secrets of misdirection.
And we've also had a listener from East St Kilda, Simo, who said the magic... illusion worked.
It did for us in the studio.
Yeah, so go to our Facebook page, Escape Pod Joy 94.9, and you can click on the link and give it a whirl yourself or have a look at some of the videos.
Yeah, there's nothing else to do on a Saturday afternoon.
Nothing at all.
You're listening to a Joycast from GLBTIQ Community Radio Station, Joy 94.9.
This podcast was produced by Joy Media. You can support Joy's diverse sound and diverse community this June by donating to Joy Radiothon 2024. Go to joy.org.au/radiothon. And remember, we all flourish with joy.